It's a book that you have read. The chances are better than even that Nancy Pearl has read that book. She's the world's most famous librarian, even though she's no longer a librarian. You hear her on KUOW's Weekday with Steve Scheer, and you've heard her on NPR's Morning Edition. You've read her books about what books to read. You've played with her action doll. You may even have heard the bluegrass tribute band called the Nancy Pearls. But what's Nancy Pearl's story? She's been gracious enough to come by to talk to us about that. Thank you so much for coming by. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, Russ. But I have to offer a small correction to the promo that you did.
Yes.
I only won a silver medal in the skeet shooting.
Okay.
You gave me far too much credit.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yes. Right.
Where'd you grow up, Nancy?
Oh, I grew up in Detroit, Michigan.
And were you in a reading family?
Yes, I was in a reading family. My father actually got his GED because he had was an orphan and joined the Army when he was 14. His older brother lied and said they were both over 18. And so it wasn't until he was in his 70s that he went back to get his GED, and he
Wow.
was very proud of that. But he was a reader, and my mother was certainly a reader.
So did they encourage you to read, or did you come to it on your own?
Oh, I think you know, I have no memory of my mother reading to me, but my sister assures me that she did. But mostly the people who encouraged me about reading the most were the librarians at my local public library. And it was because of them, really totally because of them, that I wanted to be a librarian.
Did you get the first book you read from the library, or was it something around the home?
Well, we didn't have any. We were very poor, and so we did not have books. We did, I mean, children's books especially. I mean, I think the first children's book I owned, well, I'm sure nobody ever has read this, but it was a book called Sand Dune Pony, because I was one of those girls who just loved horses, even in the middle of Detroit.
Sand Dune Pony.
Yes. Yes. And then another one I remember owning was Marguerite Henry's Misty of Chincoteague, and actually got that autographed by her at a book fair in Detroit.
That must have been thrilling.
When I was a kid, it was fabulous.
Well, how did you happen to get into the Detroit library to meet these two librarians?
My mother took us to the library. That I'm sure she did. And after that, I just kind of spent my whole childhood and most of my adolescence at the library. And you had to be like 13 years old or in the ninth grade to get a youth card, which had a green strip across the top. And when I was 13, I said to Miss Whitehead, who was my favorite, really the person who just formed my life in a way. And I said to Miss Whitehead, I'm 13. Can I please go get a grown-up book? And very reluctantly, and I've only realized fairly recently that the reluctance that she showed when I asked her that was not because she was concerned about what I would read. She wasn't that kind of a librarian. She was just concerned that if I went over to that space on the other side of the circulation desk, mm-hmm. that I would never come back to the children's room. And she, you know, she knew, and she was right, that there were still so many wonderful books I hadn't read.
Now, I understand you almost went to MIT to study with Linguist Noam Chomsky.
Well, almost. I mean, the only time that I ever swerved from I knew when I was 10, Russ, that I wanted to be a children's librarian. And I made that decision partially because I came from a very left-wing family who was very interested in making the world a better place. And I felt that I could do no better good in the world than do for other children what Miss Whitehead did for me. So that was why. But when I was in college,
yeah.
I took a course in transformational grammar, and it nearly transformed my life. I mean, for a little while, I actually thought about applying to graduate school at MIT, but I'm not that kind. I don't have that kind of mind.
But I'm imagining the 10-year-old aspiring librarian, Nancy Pearl. So were you already kind of talking to other kids and kind of suggesting books to them at 10?
Well, I think I'm sure I did that. I mean, Miss Whitehead had book quizzes every year, every summer. So, and the winners would get to choose what book she would buy a book for each one of the winners in the different age groups, which was so generous of her because it came out of her money. But I mean, that's how I started collecting these books, like the Mary Poppins that I have
and
the Johnny Tremaine that I have, all came And you could look in them and it says, Nancy Pearl, runner up, you know. Who beat me? That's what I want to know.
Nancy Pearl is my guest. We're talking about her life in books. You aspired to be a librarian since you were 10. Sometimes we get to the place we think we want to be. Was it as great as you thought it was going to be?
Well, being a children's librarian in Detroit, and I worked both in branches and on the bookmobile. So we went out to underserved areas. And one of the places that we went out to was the Brewster Douglas Housing Project, which is one of the poorest of the poor housing projects. And that's where Diana Ross grew up.
Oh, really?
And I mean, I can see where she began and where she ended. I have nothing but admiration for her.
When you went to an impoverished place like that maybe you had parents who were into books, what was the surefire book that you could bring out? Or how did you sort of try to get kids who weren't into books into books?
Oh, yeah, good question. What kids liked then and still like, especially those middle grade readers, is they want books with a lot of action. I mean, they want something happening on every page. So The Wonderful Flight to the Mushroom Planet by Eleanor Cameron. Did you happen to read that?
I did not happen to read that.
Oh.
But a good recommendation for a young person who might not be immediately into reading.
And still in print today. My Father's Dragon was the first book that my elementary school librarian gave to me.
Well, the library was a magic place for me. The Berkshire Athenaeum in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. And what my early enthusiasm was, I found they had two whole shelves of magic books. And that was the place where I really wanted to be.
Yeah.
But your career in radio didn't start in Seattle, did it?
No, it started in Tulsa. And with KWGS, the NPR affiliate in Tulsa. And first I started at being a guest on the Newsday show. And when I got to Tulsa, they had just at that moment stopped doing music. So they were looking for something to fill those hours. Right. And so I did a show for them on books and reading.
Well, you first got on my radar back around then. I was the program director, and I got a mail from someone at Tulsa who strongly suggested that I put you on the radio in Seattle, that I give you a show. I didn't do that.
No.
But I did get you on the radio.
I
did, in fact, accomplish that, and it was a pretty exciting time. You came here without your husband. I did not realize this. You were here for 4 years before he got to move out. He had to finish his job there before he came.
Right.
That must have been hard.
Well, it was really interesting. Yeah. It was a very brave thing that I did. And the first year, I think I was in a daze. I just didn't quite understand what was happening.
Emerald City and all.
Yeah, well, just sort of, why? What am I doing here? I mean, how did I leave this very good job at the Tulsa City County Library to come here? And it happened that my younger daughter had dropped out of the University of Chicago and had moved here to do theater and hang out. And one night I remember she called and she said, you know, oh, how are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm doing fine. I'm just sitting watching the sky turn black. she said, I'll be right over. So it was a really interesting experience to have that. And we had been married quite a long time by that time. And so, I mean, what we found is that we probably talked more during those 4 years.
That's so interesting.
than we did before since.
And one of my favorite experiences, actually, in my whole career was working with you when I was the program director. And this program that you started, which is everywhere now, you and Chris Higashi, What If Seattle Read the Same Book?
Right.
How did that begin? I mean, that's everywhere now.
It is.
Washington has it. A lot of cities have adopted it. Did that spring forth from your admission?
Well, we had gotten a grant from the Lila Wallace, what was then the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. And they're very smart with their grants, and they give their grantees a year of planning, which is included in the grant money. So Chris and I were able to hire a consultant, and we explained to her that what we really wanted was something that touched on things that we felt strongly about, the existence and the importance of book clubs for building community among diverse people, that we wanted people to become, through this program, familiar with books they might not ordinarily read. And one day the consultant came in for one of our meetings and she And the paper that she handed out to us said, "What if all Seattle read the same book?" I mean, she came up with that title.
Wow.
I mean, it got a little bit of national publicity, but did get a lot of national publicity. This was a library program
right.
that we were very, very proud of. And then Chicago Public Library decided to do it.
Nancy Pearl is my guest. She's promulgated the Rule of 50, which says if you still don't like a book after slogging through the first 50 pages, set it aside. If you're more than 50 years old, subtract your age from 100 and grant it only that many pages. Nancy, really, don't some books not give up their treasures until page 75 or 100?
Yes, that is undoubtedly the case. But if you follow this rule, what you have to realize is that there's nothing to stop you going back to that book.
When Archie McPhee came out with a Nancy Pearl librarian action figure, you're holding a stack of books, you've got a finger to your lips going push to shush.
Right.
And you've said that this shushing feature on the action figure would determine which librarians have a sense of humor.
Yes.
Well, now after many years of research, what does it show? Do most librarians get a kick out of that?
Yes. I think it's fair to say that most librarians enjoy it and get the fact that it plays with the librarian stereotype.
Yeah.
I think there were probably, at its height of popularity, there were probably 30 librarians around the world who just felt it wasn't appropriate. And, you know,
what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about that?
Yeah, right.
What are you going to do?
And now, though, I have to say, I have been discontinued.
Oh, no.
Yes.
So now they're collectible.
So now
I hope you've got a couple cases in the right. basement.
No.
You're set. No.
I have none. Or I have one box.
No
maybe.
More Nancy Pearl. Collect those.
Right.
You know, we're just about out of time, but I got to ask you about your current project. You're working with Amazon to bring out-of-print books back out there. And the question is, why is anything out of print anymore? I mean, everything's digitized these days. How did that happen?
Well, books just fall out of favor.
Yeah.
A lot of books aren't digitized. I mean, if these books had been digitized so people could get them, that would have solved all my problems.
Yeah. Nancy Pearl, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank
I really
you,
appreciate
Ross.
You taking the time. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.